Hello and welcome to the Unmissables podcast. I am a man more sinned against than sinning. Boyd Hilton. Ooh. Yeah.
Classic.
You know what that quote's from?
Shakespeare.
You do, because you've watched it.
King Lear.
King Lear. And I am in many ways a man more sinned against than sinning. I think as most listeners would agree.
Yeah, you are.
In the contest of
no,
this podcast.
No, why are you agreeing with him? He's dissing. She doesn't realise
we're like those two sisters.
Yes.
I am not. If anything, I'm Cordelia.
Donna Rill and Regan.
No,
you
I'm
are not. You are not Cordelia. All will be revealed if you'd have no idea what we're talking about.
It's a Shakespearean special. These voices you hear aren't just any voices. Have just invaded the studio. I'm calling it a studio. That's Stephanie Seelan.
Hello.
And Kay Ribeiro.
Word.
We are the podcast Unmissables regulars. And this week, it's a bit of a Shakespearean special because we're reviewing King Lear, the new epic BBC Two version starring Sir Anthony Hopkins and many others.
Tony to his mates.
Tony Hopkins.
Yeah, Tony.
We're also reviewing McKellen playing the part, a 90-minute cinema documentary about Sir Ian McKellen, who, as we know, himself has played King Lear and is playing King Lear this summer in the theatre in London. Do you know that?
This summer?
Yeah.
Oh, I want to go. Should we go and see it together?
We can go and see it together. We can try.
Yeah.
So that's Shakespeare. And Arrested Development, the new season five, which, as we all know, is based on Shakespeare's Twelfth Night.
Of course.
No, I made that up. But I thought people could believe. I could have got away with that.
It's quite convincing. You honestly could have got away with that.
It's a bit Shakespearean.
It is a little.
In that it involves words.
It's about family and the complications within the family and the patriarchy and all that.
And it's comedy and tragedy.
Exactly. So it's quasi-Shakespearean. And before all that, it's our traditional what the hell have you been watching, reading, listening to, podcasting, true criming. Stephanie Seelan. Deep breath. Last week, this segment, as we call it, lasted about 5 days.
It was like a soliloquy.
Okay. No, I meant the whole segment, this whole bit. There was in a kind of format change was like quite epic.
Because
remember?
So we went overboard.
I had
a lot to talk about. Yeah. I had six things.
Yeah, but then I read out about 90 tweets as well.
So I'm not sure if they count in this section.
And we're attempting to do that again by talking about how out of hand it got last week.
Right, exactly. I'm just preparing the listeners in case, they're not expecting.
I'm really reining it in this week.
Are you?
Okay, yeah. Oh. I've only got three things.
Three?
Yeah.
Oh. Maybe that's good. No, but that's discerning. Let's hear.
Pray tell, what they are.
Have you ever watched My Friend Rockefeller? A movie from 2015.
No.
Okay, it is now available on Netflix.
Rando.
I give you the name Christian Gerhardstetter.
Oh my God.
I say it like that.
Say it again.
That sounds like the character in The Man with Two Brains, Steve Martin's Dr. Huffer. How do you spell that? Come on.
His name is Christian, Gerhardstetter.
Oh my God.
I love this name so much.
Basically, a nice man called Christian who decided that he didn't want to be Christian. He didn't want to be the German man that he was. Okay. Moved to Los Angeles, adopted a title and decided he was going to be called a Rockefeller. He was going to pretend he was a member of the Rockefeller family.
Is this a documentary?
It's a documentary, true story. And he actually he's a con artist, okay, right? He cons, so everyone thinks, he tells people that he is from a British aristocracy, okay? And everyone's like, you couldn't even tell he had the greatest British accent. Now, if you do watch this, he didn't have the greatest British accent. He sounded German. Anyway, he basically gets into the society, like all of these society people, and gets married, has children. People believe he's like this huge, he moves next door to this art dealer and tells this art dealer he's bought Jackson Pollocks. And it is a crazy, crazy story until one day, and here's the crucial point. One day they find that a house that he used to live in, the family that have moved in says, you know what we should do? We should put in a pool. Okay. They put in a pool. What do they find? A couple of dead bodies in the garden. Yeah. I know.
What a nasty bastard.
Furious. How furious would you be? You can't put a pool in then, can you? Because it becomes a crime scene. Oh, anyway.
So irritating.
Yeah. This whole thing is about this. His life is absolutely amazing. And his defense for it is, it's like all life is fiction. I've just told people a few fictions. Like women. So one woman was married to him for 10 years. She had no idea who he was. Another woman was like with him for 7 years. It's an amazing story. Anyway, My Friend Rockefeller. He wasn't a Rockefeller.
Just a clarify, this is an old, when was the film? The film came out ages ago. It's not just
2015, the film came out.
Not that long ago. Okay.
No, not that long ago.
3 years.
Yeah, Thrice year ago.
And it's arrived on Netflix now.
I hadn't seen it before, so I think it's just come on Netflix.
Okay.
It's brilliant.
Is it officially in their true crime section?
Well, you know when you get those recommendations?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for you.
Everything for me is true crime. Now, this has been on there for a little while. 2017, I think. Elias
Creeping
Grace.
Ever closer to the present.
Did you watch it?
Elias Grace. I think I watched like the first episode, yeah.
Okay, I thought you'd
What's
like
it. What's it about?
Right, based on a book by Margaret Atwood. Okay.
Yeah, oh, yeah. No, I did watch it.
Yeah,
I did. Didn't we review it on this?
No.
Oh, okay.
So Elias Grace, it's historical fiction. It's about this woman, and she is in an asylum. Basically, there's a theme. She's in an asylum, and it's whether or not she murdered a housekeeper and her master, along with another person who was in the house. Mm. So this whole thing is like she's this very beautiful, innocent girl. She's an Irish immigrant, set to work in a big house. Two people are murdered. She was found guilty of the murder, but actually the whole story is kind of flashbacks of whether she did actually do it or not. It's a very good limited series on Netflix. I really, really have enjoyed
it. And who plays her? Remind
Boys,
me.
Boys, you are asking way too much.
Sorry, yeah.
Some very
I'm gonna
nice
tell you.
Girl.
Sarah Gadon.
She's very good. Is she
Anna
actually
Paquin,
Irish?
Zachary Levi. These people are all in this show.
It's really good. It's very gripping.
She's Canadian.
But I liked it because it reminded me, I was hunting for something like The Alienist. Now I've finished The Alienist. And it's a bit like The Alienist.
Yeah. I watched the first episode. I think I reviewed it on Radio 5 Live. Yeah, it was very good. Very atmospheric.
It's very atmospheric. Mm. She's brilliant, this girl.
Yeah.
Okay, and lastly, The Wonderland Murders, a new podcast.
Oh.
Okay. Also known as the Four on the Floor murders.
Four on the floor?
Yeah, and there were four on the floor. 1981, okay, the LAPD find four people brutally beaten to death what looks like a bit like a gangland murder. One poor woman has had her head bashed in so badly it's sort of levelled her off to her eyebrows. Which
is
not funny,
Kerubiro. Sorry, it's just Steph was doing an impression. No, yeah. She was doing an impression. No. It's unfair because the pogs are going to judge me when Steph was perpetrator of making me laugh.
I've only listened to the first episode. It's very, very gruesome and graphic.
Oh, God.
Which is how I like it. It's got porn stars in it. It's got drugs
all her
in
favourite
it.
Things.
It's like, it gets messy.
Proper.
Yeah.
And that's on Netflix as well?
No, that's a podcast.
Oh, podcast.
Listen
Sorry,
with
yeah.
your ears.
Sorry, that was
a... Yeah. Wonderland Murders. It's number one in the iPod charts at the moment. Yeah.
Is it an American show or British?
It is an American show. It's from the people who bring you Hollywood and Crime.
Do they speak like that? Do they sort of do,
but
what's it called again? The vocal fry? Do they have vocal fry?
They do have a little bit of that. It's very good, though. Oh, good. Now, I am just going to say this one last time. Have you been listening to Death in Ice Valley?
Not yet.
No, not yet.
Please listen to Death in Ice Valley.
I'm being serious this time. I'm using ink on paper.
Okay. Right. It is a joint venture
Death in
between
Silicon Valley, yeah?
BBC and NRK. So the Norwegians and the British have come together to find out who murdered the Istanbul woman and who she was.
Okay.
It's really good.
And
it's a week by week. So I'm on episode six.
Oh, it's still going?
Yes, it's
where
still
is it
going.
Available,
as am
Stephanie?
I still going on about it.
Good.
It's available where you get all good podcasts.
Okay.
On your podcast app.
Okay. I'm going to commit to trying
it's
this out.
It's good. It's really good.
Good.
This week's was The Spy Catcher.
Well, don't ruin it if we're going to watch it.
I will not. And that's it. Okay?
Very good. Very good.
That was
concise.
Very good.
Yeah.
Concise, I liked all those.
Informative.
And I'm going to try at least
you got
one of them.
Kay's approval.
That's all I seek.
Yeah. Talking of which, Kay,
hello.
What have you got to tell
Hi,
us
friends.
About?
I've got three things too.
She's got copious notes. I've just looked. I reckon
no spoilers.
She's doing a shuffle.
Yeah.
Quite thick, dense wad of notes.
Yeah. What's in that wad?
Right, number one on the wad is Innocent. Now, have either of you watched this on ITV?
I've watched the first two.
Yep.
There were four, weren't there? Yeah.
Yes, there were four episodes. They're all on ITV Player, Steph. You can catch up. Screenwriter Chris Lang wrote it. And basically, Lee Ingleby's in it from The A Word.
Oh, he's great.
Yeah.
Yeah,
he's fantastic.
He
plays a dad who's been in prison for 7 years, convicted of his wife's murder. He's always protested his innocence.
How have I not heard of this?
And it's because it's not true life, it's fiction. and
it's a drama.
Anyway, so there's been multiple like retrials, and on the final one he gets let off on a technicality, and then he sets about proving his innocence and finding out who the hell he's someone else did it. He wants to find out who it is.
Sounds like The Fugitive.
And he wants to get his kids back from his sister-in-law Alice, played by Hermione Norris. Hermione. It's really good. So there's four episodes. It ticks all the boxes of like good crime dramas, you know, there's twists, turns, red herrings, like vast, like sweeping landscapes, a bit Broadchurch.
Oh yeah, it's set, isn't it? It's got coastal place, yeah, somewhere
by the sea.
Broadstairsy, somewhere like that. Yeah. Somewhere yeah, nice.
Let's say that. And it's really, really good. Now, I was a bit disappointed, well, not momentarily disappointed at episode 3, because I actually guessed who had done it.
Isn't it four parts?
Oh. Yeah.
Oh, but you find out in episode 3.
No, I twigged.
Oh, you twigged. It's
yes,
a twig.
I twigged. Right. Which I don't usually ever do. No. Like, I never actively think about it, and it just never occurs to me, but it did. However, what I'd say is, which I think is a testament, when I got to episode 4 and it was all kind of unraveled, I still think the explanation, the motive was really good.
Oh, good.
Yeah, and it wasn't left on a cliffhanger. So, you know how,
resolved.
Steph, you find that annoying when it's like
I can't
clearly
be
setting
that.
Up for a second one.
That.
I felt,
just tell me
felt happy with the ending.
Let's move on.
Yeah.
We should really have. We normally would have reviewed that because it was a big ITV stripped across the week drama last week. But we had so many other. It was a packed week of dramas. That's the reason why we didn't do it. Yeah. Apologies.
Actually, got to tell you, Angel Coolby is in it as a detective, and she played Laura Roebuck in The Tunnel. You know his wife, and she's really good in
she's
it.
She's fantastic. Mm.
Okay, so check it out.
Right, I'm definitely going to watch that, and I can watch it all now.
Yeah,
on the ITV player. Is it the ITV Hub?
Yes, I think it is.
Or maybe why can we never remember what these
services
are
called? I don't know, it's like 4OD all over
there.
Yeah,
I mean, it's there on your TV somewhere. Yeah. I've also got the old-fashioned DVD if you want to borrow that.
Oh, have you? FYI,
yeah, I think it's on DVD on Monday.
I haven't got a DVD player.
No, of course you haven't. No. I wonder why that is.
Yeah, illegal activity. Anyway, right, next up is a book, The Colour of B. Larkham's Murder by Sarah J. Harris. Now,
you have gone so murdery. I am loving this.
No. Well, this was basically, I read in a magazine called Heat, a good review of it by our production editor, Lisa. And she said, look, I think you'll like it. Give it a go. And it's based on a character called Jasper, who has a condition called
synesthesia.
Yeah.
Synesthesia.
Yeah, which in his case means he can't recognise faces, but he just sees all noises and voices in colours, right? And days and words, everything has a colour to
him. Oh, like when Thursday's blue, because it is, and Wednesday's green.
Oh, okay, maybe you've got it. Oh. So he basically is obsessed with the parakeets in that like nesting in the tree opposite him and belonging to a woman called B. Larkham. She lives in the house. And he forms this like really sweet, you know, kind of unusual like relationship with her. You know, he's just very obsessed with these parakeets and wants to like stand in her bedroom and watch them with his binoculars because he's just very, you know, into it. B. Larkham is murdered, as the title suggests.
Oh, no.
And he becomes potentially the last person to have seen her. So then,
but
it's
he was too busy looking at the parakeets.
Well, and also he can't recognise faces.
Oh,
so like,
damn it.
He documents the comings and goings of the parakeets as well as the music students who go and visit her. So he's like a kind of reliable witness, but also unreliable because he can't really, you can't meaningfully take what he says.
He's not
going to
be any good in a lineup.
So it is honestly, it's 20 pages in, I was going to give up because, no, it's a bit like, have you ever read Chaucer?
20 pages in.
Have you read Chaucer?
Yes.
Right. This sounds like
a weird... Is it written like Chaucer?
No, but it's a weird comparison to make, seemingly. But, you know, with Chaucer, how it can be frustrating when you first read it because you can't really understand what's going on until you've broken the code, you know, like, you know, in that case, it's Middle English. With this, because he talks in colours all the time, it can be quite hard.
How does that work?
Because information is given to you, but because everything is like written in a way that it's associated with colours, after a while, first
sounds like a lot of work.
No, it's not. First 20 pages, I did find it hard work, and I said to Lisa, "Look, do you know what? I'm going to have to give it." She was like, "No, honestly, just let it kick in." And it's true. Before long, you're like you're gripped by the story. Okay. It's very interesting. Interesting characters, and actually, it's quite dark.
Do the parakeets get involved?
They do actually. Oh. You're being funny, but they do.
No, I'm not, because it reminds me of a novel called "Ask the Parrot" by Richard Stark, who's a famous crime writer, and I reviewed it on the Simon Mayo years ago, and there's a brilliant chapter in it from the point of view of the parrot.
Oh, really?
Yeah, just saying. It's legendary.
Okay, no parrot narrative.
I want to read that.
Yeah, it's classic.
Parrots don't speak or communicate in this book.
It's called Ask the Parrot.
Yeah.
But listen, I would recommend it. The Colour of B. Larkham's Murder, Sarah J. Harris. That's the book I wanted to tell you about. Mm.
How much does it cost?
I don't know.
I got it for free. $6.99.
I got it for free because
we
had a review copy.
People are going to have to buy it.
Yeah, true, but you're very, okay.
I don't know. It's a Google.
It's worth the money, though, is what Kay's saying.
Yeah, I'm saying it's good.
If it's £20, is it worth the money?
Well, sometimes you have to pay for things, as I've said before.
Saying, maybe I'll find out
next
how much it is.
On your list, Kay.
Next, my last thing. I said last week.
Only two?
No. This is the last thing on my list.
Oh, what was the first thing?
Innocent?
Oh, yeah.
Boyd.
Sorry.
Boyd. Again,
Boyd,
another chapter for
Boyd's
senior
moments. Boyd's having a King Lear moment. Ooh. Anyway, right. final thing I want to talk about. Last week I was chatting about Barbara Machen and saying how I was on the Soap Awards.
Oh, your new best friend.
Yeah, she's really lovely. And she's the creator of Waking the Dead. So I decided she had written a prequel to that, The Unforgiven, and it was on the radio iPlay I was telling you about. Radio 4, did I tell you about this?
Yes, you did, because you were amazed that there was an app.
Yes, yeah. There was. Yeah. Anyway, it's really good. So it's like 7 years. So it's 7 years since Waking the Dead's finished, but this is the prequel. So it's set in 1984, I think it is. And it's before DNA, CCTV, mobile phones and everything. And the character Peter Boyd, who I wasn't actually familiar with. Did you used to watch Waking the Dead?
Yeah, played by Trevor Eve.
Yeah.
Shouty Eve.
He's not in it, but it's basically his career's on the line and all the original characters have to try and like help him and solve a murder in the obviously in the process. It's 5 episodes and it's really good. So it's called The Unforgiven.
It should be called Putting the Dead to Sleep, shouldn't it? It's the prequel to Waking the Dead. Mm.
Can I just say, if you would like to buy The Colour of Bea Lockham's Murder, you can get it on the old Amazon. Now, if you've got Prime, you can get it tomorrow. You've got to order within an hour, and it's £6.49.
Quick!
This is not live. Yeah. I really, really like the... What did you call it? The cover.
The cover
nice.
Is good.
Yeah. What should we call it? The cover.
And I'm so excited that you've completely embraced all of your things were super murdery.
I know. I don't know how that's happened. Well, they've been quality.
That's true, yeah.
Quality murders.
Boyd, what murdery things have you been watching?
No. Actually, one of them's murdery. Ooh. One of them's murdery. The other two aren't. I was going to mention The Royal Wedding.
Were you now?
Good response.
I did not expect this from
you. Well, I mean, in brackets, no. In brackets, the coverage of The Royal Wedding, which Dermot, our close personal friend of the podcast, Dermot,
it was O'Leary, great.
Was brilliant.
He was chased down the streets in Windsor afterwards.
Was he?
Yeah.
It was amazing.
By the fans, because he was in Windsor. He was chased
That's
down the
brilliant.
Streets.
Him and Kirsty Young were brilliant together. I love them both. But this is in brackets. This is in parentheses to the main thing I'm going to get to in a second. Ooh. So I just wanted to say that because they were great. Yeah. The main thing is... Sky Atlantic showed Corden Tish
the
Royal Wedding on Saturday night. So this went out live on HBO. Bearing in mind it was the wee small hours of the morning in America.
It's a Will Ferrell thing.
Will Ferrell and Molly Shannon playing
these. Ferrell? Are we now calling
Ferrell?
I love
Ferrell.
This. No, but you're doing the singer.
She went, Ferrell, yeah, the singer.
No,
Will
but like,
Ferrell.
Like the singer, I like that. That's
Will good. Ferrell.
Yeah.
Will Ferrell.
No,
Will
Ferrell.
Whatever. They play these fictional presenters called in Tish, and they did a pageant. They did the pageant last year in a kind of live commentating on a pageant. People didn't know whether it was real or whether it was fake because their makeup is quite clever.
Yeah.
And they did it on Amazon Prime. This time for HBO, they did their live commentary on The Royal Wedding, which went out on HBO in America, and Sky Atlantic showed it on Saturday night. And it's so funny because for so many things. First of all, they did it just by the Thames, by Tower Bridge, which was about 10 minutes from where I live. I was furious.
What,
I could
have
gone
actually
and,
here?
They actually filmed it. They set
it wasn't
up
green screen.
No, it was not green screen. It was very real. They came to London and filmed it by the Thames. You could see people wandering by.
Oh my God, I would have loved to see that.
Like miles away from Windsor, obviously nowhere near Windsor. And that's the first very funny joke, that they're nowhere near the actual bloody wedding.
That's because lots of Americans might think that Windsor is
of course,
like right next
exactly,
to... Yeah.
Exactly. Then the second really funny thing is they genuinely didn't get... So they have access to the people as people are arriving and as people are leaving, but they didn't have permission
for the inside. Oh, no.
So there's a big bit in the middle for like the 35 to maybe even longer bit in the middle where they have just commentating on basically the outside of the church in Windsor and they have no other visuals. They recorded some VTs, which are very funny. They did the thing about suits. The wrong suits, not the right TV thing of suits, which is really funny. But essentially, a lot of it is just them chatting away about shit.
Oh, that must be hilarious,
though. It's so funny, honestly. You've got
I'm going to have
to
check that out.
It's brilliant. So yeah, I absolutely loved it, and it was just the two of them. There's many quotes I could give you, but there's one of my favourites was when he said about the kiss. So their response to the kiss, which is pretty much the first thing they see when they've been waiting all that time for them to emerge from the church, and he says, "One small kiss for man, one giant kiss for mankind." There are many other great moments. So that was, that's Corden Tish. It's on your Sky catch-up thing. It should be on Now TV as well.
Did you watch The Royal Wedding proper on
BBC? I did, of course, in full, yeah.
And were you moved to tears?
I wasn't moved to tears, but I really thought Dermot did a great job. I flicked over briefly to Sky News to check out Kay Burley, because also it was in Ultra HD on Sky News, so it looked better. It looked great. Did you see any of Kay Burley?
No,
Dermot.
She was bonkers.
Really?
Oh, she kept running into the crowd, like, just throwing her mic at the like people there,
yeah,
and going on. And she honestly, they genuinely missed some key moments.
Oh, did they?
Yeah,
it makes me feel anxious.
Did. Yeah, and then she had to take her shoes off and run back onto the set. Like when the guests started arriving, they missed some of that, and she kind of had to say to her guests, well, "What's happened? What have I missed?" I'm like, "Yeah, because you were running around."
Well, this sounds like Challenge Annika.
It was a bit like the Challenge Annika version of the Royal Wedding. Challenge K.
Oh Burley. Dear.
Yeah, your namesake. It was weird.
I went strictly BBC. It was very,
of course,
very good.
You've got to. So yeah, Corden Tish, that's one thing. Then the other thing I was going to mention is I went to see this film called Hotel Artemis last week, which isn't out till July.
Oh, my friend Nick from Empire was talking about this.
Oh, there you go, yeah. I went to a very special, because I kind of know the director, Drew Pearce, all cards on the table, I've known him for years.
Bong.
He's British, he's also friends with...
Does he live in your building?
Dermot O'Leary, he doesn't live in my building, he's friends with Dermot. He did a show years ago called ITV2 called No Heroes, which is about superheroes. It was a comedy superhero show, like sitcom. Way ahead of its time, because now everything's all about superheroes. And he then wrote Iron Man 3, the screenplay.
He wrote Iron Man 3?
Huge break in Hollywood, yeah. Which was great. A lot of people still consider that, as I do, to be one of the great superhero films.
But that's because he's
your friend. No, it's separate from that. Mm. So I went to this special screening. Like Edith Bowen was there. Other people were there.
All the greats.
It's got an incredible... This film has got an incredible... This is his first film as director. So he's written loads of great things. First film as director. It's got an incredible cast. Jodie Foster.
This is the murdery one, isn't it?
Yeah. So it's about setting this kind of future
Hotel?
World where there's kind of... rioting, a dystopian version.
I'm just going to make
LA.
A cup of tea.
Sorry.
Do you want anything?
Dystopian
Do
version of LA.
Anything?
And there's riots going on, and there's some kind of totalitarian situation, not quite sure. And it's set in this hospital, a private hospital for villains, for killers, run by Jodie Foster.
Like the Gotham Asylum.
Yeah, a bit like that, yeah. So all the people in there are bad people, and they're all kind of like not, and you're not allowed any weapons. You have to give up your weapons. You're not allowed to kill each other within. It's like a kind of
why would
safe
you be
place
allowed weapons
for
in a
psychopaths.
Oh,
because it's a hospital, so it's called Hotel Artemis. That's what
okay,
she calls
fine.
It. It's disguised as a hotel, but all the villain world know about it.
Roger.
Jodie Foster runs it. She's she hasn't done it. She hasn't acted in a film for ages and ages. She's obviously now mainly a director. She directs lots of stuff. It's brilliant to see her back. She's great in it. Sterling K. Brown, remember, from People vs. O.J. Simpson?
Yeah.
Brilliant. Sophia Boutella is in it. Great. Jeff Goldblum.
Jeff Goldblum?
Jeff Goldblum.
Welcome
as I
back,
live and
Jeff.
Breathe. Zachary Quinto. Dave Bautista.
Oh, my God.
Who is,
God.
Like, Jodie Foster's assistant, and they're brilliant together. Incredible cast. It's a
is
really
it
great idea. It's quite violent.
Yeah.
Really great idea. Completely original. It's like an absolute original. I've never seen anything like it. It's got a lot of bits. It's a bit Tarantino-ish at some points, but it is its own thing. I was really impressed. July. Watch out for it.
Okay.
It's really good.
So, like, it's
Hotel.
Murdery.
It's quite murdery. You'll quite like it, I think. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Lots of murders.
Oh, do you know what I was going to ask you if we
what
could
are you
do? Because I saw on the Netflix previews that The Staircase is coming.
Oh, do you know
okay. What?
Whisper it now. I've seen the first two.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Okay, so
this is a classic true crime series.
This
yeah.
is one of the greatest mysteries of all time. A man called Michael Peterson. I've forgotten the name. I've forgotten what the podcast was about it. Because there was a great podcast this year about it. I will remember.
Wasn't it just called The Staircase?
No. Somebody else did a podcast about it this year. Michael Peterson's wife was found at the bottom of the stairs, okay? And... basically, for years and years and years, it's been, did he push her? Did he kill her? She was very wealthy. He was in a lot of debt. His previous wife died under suspicious circumstances. But there's been loads and loads and loads of theories about this. A French film crew made the original Staircase,
yeah.
Which is an original documentary about this. And they were including that loads of strange theories, like someone thinks that an owl might have come in and attacked her, and that's
you
how she
know.
Died, because there was
parrot.
A feather. I mean, there's a theme here.
Yeah.
But this is, I mean, this,
when did
I'm
this
so
murder
excited.
Happen?
This happened...
80s, I want to say.
I want to say late
80s.
That's
a long time ago. Yeah.
But
people are still talking about it.
It is fascinating.
Yeah, it's kind of like the forerunner of making a murderer.
Michael Peterson is a real... He's one of these guys that he really sort of sought out the fame after his wife died.
He was
died.
A writer, remember?
Yeah,
well,
he was
so,
a journalist.
Yeah.
That's a bit like the podcast I recommended to you recently. Do you remember?
West Cork guy, Ian Bailey, is a little bit like Michael Peterson.
Yeah.
Well, the interesting thing is, yeah, so, and what's happened
Beyond Reasonable Doubt. Sorry, thanks, Shondan. Beyond Reasonable Doubt podcast. Is the podcast.
What's happened is that this classic true crime show, so that French group you talked about, they had incredible access to everything.
And he ended up going out with one of them. He ended up having a relationship with
them. The defense attorneys, the trial itself, the people involved, the guy, the accused.
I want to watch that documentary.
Yeah. No, this is... what's happening is Netflix has remastered the original and they've made two new episodes following up the story all this time later. So they've sent me the links already, I have to say. I'm slightly whispering because I'm not sure I'm allowed to say that yet. So it's going to arrive in the middle of June and we'll be able to do it. Yeah
let's excited. Do it. Of course we'll do it, yeah. I cannot wait for this.
Yeah, it's like a lot of people consider it to be the greatest ever true crime documentary. It is. So you saw the original,
Yeah, I've seen the original. Yeah. I didn't. I thought this was a completely new thing, but is it not?
No, it says remastered. So it's all the original episodes plus I think maybe
that makes sense why it's called. And then I thought there was like 10.
I'm slightly making up how many there are.
Okay.
Yeah, but it is going to be coming soon to the Netflix.
Okay, I think you'll enjoy it.
Oh, I'm excited
do you know what? I feel so excited. We're all gone super murdery.
We have, yeah.
Just in our listening and reading habits.
Actions.
Yeah. That was the pre-meet. Before we go on to the meet, we're now in, what do we call it now?
The tweets before the meets.
There you go.
Right.
Okay. I turn to you.
Hello. So we've got a tweet from @Fenwood who says he's at No Such Thing as a Fish recording in Auckland and he can't wait till the At Unmissables podcast come here to record a live podcast in a small cafe.
Wait a minute.
He's at a recording of No Such Thing as a Fish, which is obviously a gigantic podcast.
Yes.
Wait a minute. He's in New Zealand.
Yeah.
Wow.
We're coming.
We're coming to get you.
Is he going to pay for the trip?
Yeah, is he getting our tickets?
That is a great point.
Can we stay with him also?
Yeah. Do you think Bauer is going to pay for us to do a live podcast in New Zealand?
Right, Fenwood would pay for us, I'm sure.
Find out if he's got one of those pull-out sofas. Boyd will bring a camp bed and we'll be on our way.
He says it's #best coffee in the world, so I'm there. I love coffee.
I don't drink coffee. Oh, I can't go.
They'll do a hot shock, I'm sure. Hocho.
Okay.
Right.
Thanks. It was definitely our farthest reaching listener, surely.
Yeah, I think
if you can bet on New Zealand, I mean, you just can't, can you?
Fenwood, let us know if you live there or you're just on holiday.
He's our faraway pog.
Yeah.
Foreign pog.
Person on the faraway ground.
Yeah, he's a pog.
Then we had a question from @Marky Mansfield who says, when will Homeland 7 be available on Netflix?
Well, Mark, we don't know.
Hold on. But you can still watch Homeland 7, which is the one that's just finished. I'm sure you can still watch this on All 4, 4OD.
Yeah, 4OD. All 4, 4OD. Obviously, Mark hasn't probably not got access to that for whatever reason. Maybe he's not living in the country.
Mark, are you also abroad?
No, Mark. No, I know Mark. He listens to us
maybe
on
Maybe he just
the,
doesn't like All 4, 4.
No, he listens to us on the motorway, do you remember? Okay. He's an early poglet.
They probably haven't got all of it, is my guess, because there's like 10 or whatever episodes, aren't there? So, you know.
@Marky Mansfield, anyway, let us know if you're in the country.
We will endeavour to find out, but we don't know. Yeah,
Mark,
the honest
in the meantime, try and get 4OD /4. All four.
Crank up the All 4. I think it's on there.
All right. Well, that's the question answered.
Or search on the internet. You might be able to find it. Do you know what? I'm going to look now.
Yeah, okay. Good. Let's actually do some
research. And while you're doing this is a bit of a spoiler for the question, because we did do a shout out.
Oh, should we'll leave that?
Should we leave it?
When we get to question time is actually from a listener.
We did ask you pogs what you wanted question time to be, and we have had a great question.
Yeah.
So we'll be doing that later.
But please, God, generally do give us questions.
Get in touch. Yeah. If there's anything you want to know, any comments, you know, if you just want to tell us where you live, that seems to be a kind of general question at the moment, which country you're in.
If you're that far away, I think. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, if you live in Penge, then I'm not that interested.
Yeah. Boyd?
Nothing against Penge. Well, not anti-Penge.
If you've got anything to say to us at Unmissables Pod, let us know what you think.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Now then, it's time for the meat, the Shakespearean meat. It doesn't get meatier than King Bloody Lear, which is arriving on Bank Holiday Monday, the 28th of May at 9:30 p.m. And it stars Anthony Hopkins, Emma Thompson, Emily Watson, Florence Pugh, Jim Broadbent, John McMillan, Andrew Scott of Sherlock fame.
Yeah, we've got to have one of them.
And many more. I know you're a big fan of both Shakespeare.
I am.
And King Lear.
I am.
Steph, please, God, tell us what happens in this story.
Okay, now I'm going to say to all you lovely pogs out there, if you have no idea what this story is about, you need to listen to me very carefully, or you need to go on to, I think like the Royal Shakespeare Company will have an explanation of it. what the story is, because otherwise you will not enjoy it as much as you will if you have an idea.
I think your summary, because it's very basic, like, go on, explain it. I'm sure they'll get it.
Okay.
Maybe if they have your summary you're about to give us.
Yeah.
Just on the, you know, in their headphones when they're about to click on BBC Two. That's the way to do it.
I will be making this about, or phone me and I'll tell you. Oh, if you're going to start watching
big offer.
It, just say,
big words.
Just give me a call.
0794.
Yeah.
Why don't you go around to people's houses and do a.
Yeah, like I'm going to. Yeah.
A Steph Talks, not TED Talks.
Or I'll do like a little tech, like, yeah, summary text. Okay. Anyway. Right. Okay, this is set in the fictional present, but it's the original is like an old British monarchy, okay? Right. King Lear, played by Anthony Hopkins, has decided he's going to give up his kingdom, okay? He's like, I'm going to give it up, right? And he gets his three daughters all together and he says, which one of you loves me the most? I'm going to give it up, but who loves me the most? He feels sure that his favourite daughter, Cordelia, is going to say, I love you the most. However, so you go for... turns to his first two daughters and they profess to like love him a ridiculous amount. And then Cordelia, who's supposed to be getting married, she says, well, I love you as I should love you. I love you as a daughter loves a father. And he is furious because he wanted the big professions. Mm. He wanted her to go nutso. So he basically was like, oh, okay, I'm cutting you off. And so the guy that she's supposed to marry is like, I'm not marrying you anymore. That's it. You're not getting any of your father's wealth. That's it. So he banishes Cordelia. She has to get married to some guy from France. Furious. But he's really happy with her because she's like, oh, she's nice and honest. Then it all gets very, very messy. The two daughters who are very nasty.
Nasty bastards.
They're nasty bastards, right? They conspire because they don't really want to have anything to do with their dad. They conspire to murder their father. Meanwhile, this guy called Gloucester, who sort of looks after King Lear.
He's the Prime Minister.
He has two sons.
Yes.
Edgar and Edmund.
Yes.
One of them is a K.
Nasty bastard.
One of them is very nice.
John McMillan, Andrew Scott.
Yeah.
Andrew Scott is the nice one,
okay? Nasty bastard says that nice bastard.
Because nasty bastard is a bastard.
Yeah, he's an actual bastard.
Yes.
And so he's very upset about that.
Yeah.
And so he sets up his brother and says his brother has to run away. He says he's been doing badness, but he hasn't.
Doing badness. It's a technical term.
Yeah, it's a technical term.
Yeah.
Right. So basically, they find out they're going to try and murder King Lear. Then King Lear goes into hiding. He goes to Dover, goes into hiding to try and escape getting murdered by those nasty girls. The sisters discover that Gloucester has told the king, and then cue the worst bit of the whole thing when they literally gouge out his eyes with Emily Watson's fingernail.
It's a spoiler, but it's a very famous moment.
It's very famous. That's not
the gouging.
I don't think this can be. No, you can consider this a spoiler because people will know.
I mean, it's too late now, but yeah. No, it's fine. It's fine.
Also, it's important to say that in the process, King Lear's driven mad.
He goes completely crazy.
The madness of King Lear.
It's completely crazy. And then, now I'm worried that I don't want to say what happens. Well, I won't say what happens at the end.
Listen, Shakespeare's been around a long time.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah.
But anyway, I think you've set the scene.
Then a big war commences, and then I won't tell you what happens.
You have to tell us the ending.
I won't.
It's a study of madness, isn't it? It's his descent into madness, famously, from Lear. And at the same time of power, the incredible power battle.
It's a tragedy. It's one of Shakespeare's tragedies.
Oh, of course, yeah. It's a huge one. Some would say his greatest tragedy.
Mm-hmm.
I may say that.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing is, which you haven't mentioned, well, you kind of mentioned it, is it is set, I do believe, I'm going to say it, in a dystopian version of the present.
Yeah.
Because it's
got a touch of the dystopia.
It's all modern day. It's all there's soldiers, there's the military, there's clearly an oppressive regime of which Lear is part of. And at one point, you know, I thought a very good scene where he invades the house of one of the daughters and they've got the army with him. Mm. That's all very interesting. But it's kind of like King Lear does dystopia, I feel. And I don't know how you were going to feel about that. So
I wouldn't like to couch it like that.
I don't think it's dystopian.
I was going to put Steph off, but I don't
think so.
This is written and directed by Richard Eyre, who's a legendary BAFTA-winning director. It's been in development a long time, so it's a big thing that Tony Hopkins, as I'm calling him, has wanted to do this for ages. You know how old he is? He is 80, which is the age, yes.
Of King Lear?
Of King Lear. Mm. And I have to say, it's pretty good work, isn't it?
There's
a lot of physical, a lot of stuff for him to do.
He is astounding.
That's incredible. So, Kay, what's your verdict on this Lear?
I thought it was excellent. I love Lear because I studied it at school.
Oh, did you?
Yes. So I've always had a soft spot for it. And
should
I
should have got you to do the pricey.
And I thought...
you should probably would have done it.
No, I think you did. No, you did it justice. I thought Tone,
that is unkind,
as I like to call him, was an excellent Lear.
Tone.
Probably the best, yeah. The best Lear I've seen.
The best you've seen.
Mm.
Wow.
And, well, I've
big
seen
words.
One other. No, he is really, really good. I also wanted to give a shout out to Jim Carter, who played the Earl of Kent,
yes,
a.k.a. Mr. Carter from Downton Abbey.
Yes.
He plays his loyal kind of friend and subject who is banished by Lear and then ends up being the one who raised lulled him to the end and tries to save him.
Gets his head shaved.
But also, yeah, and also Carl Johnson, who plays the Fool, who's always a great character.
The
Fool is a great character in
good
Lear.
Fool.
But I was worried about it when I heard about this because I thought, obviously, it's got this stellar cast, but a modern interpretation. Mm. I thought, oh, is it going to be like, you know, Clueless was a, what was it, Emma? No, Jane Austen's, was it?
Oh, Jane Austen,
Emma. And then 10 Things That I Hate About You was The Taming of the Shrew.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, is it going to be like this?
They'll do a comedy
version.
No,
it's well, much you know, more, it's more Baz Luhrmann age.
King Lear is rom-com.
Juliet, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah. So, no, I was just worried about it. But actually, I thought it worked really well. And actually, one of the scenes I loved was when Lear is in the midst of his madness, there's a scene where he's seen like walking around the streets, pushing a shopping trolley, ranting and raving. And I thought, actually, it's quite a good comparison to something that would happen today and you'd see in...
Mm. I was just going to say, he said when they're filming that scene, someone, a member of the public, thought he was a homeless person.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah. That's what I mean. Yeah, it was just so apt. And I thought it was,
Steph?
I absolutely loved it. I didn't study King. I did Midsummer Night's Dream at school. So
did
I was,
you?
Yeah.
You're only allowed one Shakespeare. Play.
Well, you are, don't you? But you do find when you grow up, you go, which one did you do at school? Because
I did Othello. Othello.
Actually, I want them to bring Juliet as well. Sorry, I did. We did two.
So you lied. You did two.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I did those. But so I knew the story, but I didn't know it. Like, I wouldn't know it as in depth as Kay knows it. I really, really enjoyed it. I thought it was absolutely fantastic. I just thought Anthony Hopkins was just, I mean, oh God, it made me feel tired though. It's an exhausting performance from him. But
there's a lot of shouting.
There's a lot of shouting.
If you've seen The Trip,
right,
when Steve Coogan and Rob Brydon do a lot of Tony Hopkins impressions,
oh, do they?
A lot of him shouting like that.
Yeah, he does
there's
shout
a lot, of that.
A lot.
To be fair, it's a shouty role.
It's a very shouty role. King Lear is very angry.
Do you know what I thought? That they had cast like the sisters, with Emma Thompson and Emily Watson as the sisters. They were perfect,
incredible,
weren't they? And they were both really, really brilliant. I loved
that. Florence Pugh of
yes.
Lady Macbeth
fame.
Oh,
she
brilliant.
Was great.
That's Cordelia, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Emma Thompson, I mean, I absolutely agree that Tony Hopkins, it's all about Tony shouting a lot. But to be fair to him, it demands shouting because he's going mad. He's going mad and he's very angry at everything. But they also have to do a lot of shouting. There's one scene where, I mean, in the eye gouge scene, which I thought they did very well, it's everyone's at a level of hysteria.
Mm.
But it kind of has to be for it to work, make it believable, they resort to this horrendous
Well, it's kind
thing.
Of, it's
crescendo.
It's collective madness,
it's
isn't it?
Yeah, collective madness, exactly. Yeah, everyone goes effing
mad
bonkers.
For different reasons,
And it descends into a kind of whirlwind of bonkersness in the last
hour. They're all hideous.
Yeah.
Like, they're all, like, all this, the sisters, except for Cordelia and the retinue and, like, the son. But I think that Emma Thompson had a touch of the Cruella de Vil about her, which I enjoyed.
Yes, yeah, so I was going to say
with her coat, her sweeping coat was amazing.
Brilliant look. Just, I mean, she's the greatest for me. Like Emma Thompson, I did it. You know, I had the honour of doing a get ready for a big name drop, Life in Pictures event with her, which I interviewed her for 90 minutes on stage.
Did you?
Yes, that was the greatest. Day of my life.
She is lovely, isn't she?
She's so incredible. And she also, have you seen it when she was asked about the royal wedding? Which
do you know what? I really was hoping you wouldn't bring that up because I can't watch that again because it really upsets me.
Oh, it's hilarious.
But she looks like, oh, it's horrible.
What happened?
She was asked about the royal wedding on some, she was promoting something in America.
She's promoting King Lear.
Oh, no, it was.
She was. It was King Lear.
Was it King Lear's screen?
Yeah.
Okay. And she was asked by some, like Entertainment Tonight or something, oh, you're looking forward to the royal wedding? She's like, just no. Just no.
No, like she said, she basically was like, they were like, what do you think about the royal wedding? She was like, I do not have one thought in my head about it.
Yeah.
And then then she goes on and goes, just stop it, okay? I don't know them. Just stop it. And it's actually, if you love Emma Thompson, it's kind of unsettling because she gets cross and you don't want to think of her as cross like that.
No, she's being honest. She's being brutally honest. She can do no wrong.
I would expect that from her, actually, to be like quite forthright.
Right,
and just
exactly.
I think it's fine.
I thought they did did a really clever job of modernizing, and it's a 2-hour film. It's a film. It's Bed a widescreen, brilliantly directed film. Very cinematic presentation of the story. And bearing in mind, because when you see it, the last time I saw it on stage, which I think was about 10 years ago, it was about 3.5 hours long. So they've done a pretty clever job, and I couldn't work out where the cuts were. I couldn't kind of. It was,
maybe they didn't.
I'm no expert.
I don't think they spent as much time with his descent into madness.
Maybe it's quite quick, isn't it? Yeah, you're right. You might be right.
And
about
also,
that.
I would say you don't the battle at the end. Yeah. There isn't a lot of that.
Okay,
I think that's good.
Yeah. Okay, moving us on. That is,
I think
it's good.
I think that's good. Goodbye.
No, yeah. As in, I think it's good about the battle. You want to see it played out so much.
No,
you
exactly.
Know?
Really good job. It's going to be 4.5 stars from me.
It's 5 from me.
It's 4 for me.
Excellent. And we should say, for Sherlock fans, that Andrew Scott is fantastic as well, as he always is.
He is fantastic.
And he did, because he did a brilliant updated version of Macbeth, which they showed on TV, which had similarities, because it was also modern, you know, updated to the modern world. And given, and I thought there were interesting similarities between the two versions. Just saying. Lear is a bank holiday treat on Monday, the 28th of May, next Monday, BBC Two, 9 p.m. And also about to play King Lear on the London stage in what he's saying is going to be his last ever big Shakespearean role is 78-year-old Ian McKellen, who is the star of his own feature-length documentary arriving in cinemas on the 27th of May. And they're going to beam this documentary all around the country to cinemas. And there's going to be an interview with Graham Norton, a Q&A after it. And that's probably the most exciting way of seeing it. Kay, tell us all about this film called McKellen Playing the Part.
Okay, so this is based around a 14-hour interview. Do not worry, this isn't 14 hours long.
Yui.
Yes, it is a condensed version. And Playing the Part basically looks at Ian McKellen's life story from growing up and living through the war, working in the West End, becoming a pioneering stage star, and coming out and kind of creating Stonewall, which I didn't realise he had done, which obviously fights for the equality of lesbians, gays, trans people across the UK. And it's that in a nutshell. You get exclusive access and footage from his childhood. You see his photo albums and... Steph's doing a face that I can't tell you what she's done. I already know Steph's verdict.
What did that face mean?
It was a Yawnsville face.
My God. Right. Well, that's carry on, Kay. No, ignore her.
That's what it is. It's basically celebrating his life from him. Himself.
And they also have dramatic, we should say, I think, one of the... Dramatic recreation.
Yes, they do, actually. Yeah, they do. From young actor Milo Parker, who plays Gerald Durrell in The Durrells.
Yes.
Recreates, you know, parts of his life from when he was younger and older. And there's footage
Scott Chambers is another actor. So as he goes on throughout his life, his young life, Scott Chambers is another guy who's in the director, Joe Stevenson. This is his second film. They made a film called Chicken, which was really good, that came out last year. And Scott Chambers is the star. And he plays the kind of like early 20s version of McKellen.
Yeah. And that is it.
In recreations. I'm getting the vibe. I'm getting this vibe. I don't know where it's, you know, I don't know how I'm feeling it. Like almost ESP.
Look,
that Steph had a problem with McKellen playing the part.
I tell you
is
what
it because you forced your doofus boyfriend, Liam B. George, to watch it?
Husband. And also not a doofus.
Okay. Right. I tell you what it is. Right. Not once have I thought to myself, I'd really love a dramatic recreation of what Ian McKellen's life looked like over a 2-hour period. That's probably not a good place to start.
Sucky.
Okay. Right. Ian McKellen, he's great. Look, he's obviously fantastic. I really love, you know, all of the good stuff he's done. But I am not sure that it needs to be a film, in cinemas about this, because you know what I love, you know those in the Actors Studios things,
yeah,
they're really great. That's how those things should go when you want to talk about your life, I think. If you're an actor,
it's very prescriptive.
I'm just saying,
they have to do that.
My mind, I enjoy those things. I think Ian McKellen is wonderful and I respect him greatly as an actor, but there's probably something I'd prefer to watch for 2 long hours.
It's only an hour and 36 minutes for a start, so let's not exaggerate.
It didn't feel like that.
Oh.
it's good. It's really interesting. I know more about him now, but I think it's a little unnecessary.
Wow.
Sorry. I'm just being totally truthful.
I've got to confess.
You can only be honest.
Before I watch this, I was of a similar opinion to Steph, and like, because she one of you told me it was 2 hours, and I was like, oh,
that was me.
She's exaggerating.
However, I've done a reverse ferret, because while I agree, like, if it was about Dame Judi Dench, obviously I'd be lapping this up. So I was like, Ian McKellen, how much more do I need to know about him, et cetera, et cetera. However, when I watched it, I found it actually really interesting. And I like getting to know people, and hearing people when they're passionate about what they do is really enthralling.
Agreed.
Actually.
You're a people person.
Yeah, he is interesting.
Steph's a dead person.
No,
person.
I do. No, it was good. It's just probably for... I wouldn't watch it again.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, you don't need to watch it again, though.
Yeah, like, carry on, Kay, yes.
But I really enjoyed it, like, especially this part, well, learning about his life and his acting career, because he loves the theatre, and hearing about that and the different people he's worked with, Judi Dench, Jacoby, all these people is great. But also, like, finding out about how, you know, he didn't come out till he was 49 years old, and why he felt, you know, why he felt he wasn't unable to do that till that point. But then when he did, and all the amazing work he did for
that's
the gay
the
community and Stonewall, and also he gave this really there's footage of him giving a rousing speech on David Frost's, you know, show on.
Yeah, there's a big debate with this Tory doofus. Yeah.
And I completely loved that.
That was about Section 28, do you remember?
Yeah, Section 28, yeah.
That was absolutely, if you watch it for anything, watch it for that. But that's the thing, I would have much preferred it to be much more about his actual life, because I found, I have to say...
Much more about what?
Much more about his, like, that part of his life, because I found all the actoring stuff a little bit pompous. I did.
What I don't want this to be, though, is like basically an obit, because the way he's talking towards the end is like he's very preoccupied by death and his death.
Yeah.
And towards the end, I was like, oh no, don't let this be, you know, your final sign off. Not that it is, but you know, it just had a touch of that towards the end, you know, because he really is.
Yeah, it did.
He says he thinks about it every day, dying, and he's even planned his funeral and stuff. So.
But he did say, you're right, he did have that. But I think it's only natural, isn't it? When, I mean, he's nearly 80, he's.
The Queen's 92.
I know, but who's to say she doesn't think about dying every day as well? She just doesn't. We never find out because she never gets interviewed for 100.
Liz is going nowhere. Liz
for an hour
going
and 35
nowhere.
Minutes. Anyway, I think, but he was very jolly, wasn't he? Funnily enough, about the day he planned his funeral.
Yeah, he said it was one of the best days,
and he was very funny about that. I love that bit. In fact, what he's talking about his memorial service, and how he's going to get. He's just very, very funny about the memorial service, particularly like. People he knows can come
in
for
free. Wants it to be in the theatre.
Yeah, if anyone's going to take part, if anyone's getting a role, then they can get paid for it. If they don't know who he is, he's very funny about.
Yeah, and he's like, this is the kind of show that I'd want to go to.
What I thought was, I loved it. I have to say, I loved
it. Did you love it? Did you really?
I loved it.
I don't believe.
No, well. I know you find it hard to believe when people disagree with you about something, but you're just going to have to take it on board.
I don't know whether
you're wrong.
Loved it.
I loved it, and I'll tell you why. Because
please do.
I know what you mean. I think it started out very gentle. It's quite a kind of he's in the 14-hour interview context, so it's not an interview I would say necessarily of great vigor, you know, like he's not a kind of
he's in a very reflective
mood, but I think once you get into the vibe of it, and I've always feel this with interviews, the best interviews for me are these kind of interviews where they're it's intimate. He clearly trusts the interviewer. Joe Stevenson is a very young director, it's only his second film, you know, they're clearly like friends, they've become friends, but
it's
I think
a
that's
slow burn
it's
interview.
A slow burn, so by halfway through, and then more and more stuff was out that you'd never get him to talk about, I think, normally. He's quite... He talks about this in the film, that he's not the kind of actor... Like, for example, the great revelation for me, the various moments he talks about, as an actor, one of his the toughest things he always faces is the moments where he's exposed and has to get really emotional. For an actor of his... You know, he's one of the most legendary actors of our time, and he admits in this that he had trouble getting in touch with his emotions at those difficult moments. Oh, that's a pretty big thing to admit for him. And you're looking cynical, but you're wrong. And then he talks about the whole gay thing. And the end, there's a brilliant bit where he talks about how when he goes to see kids in schools, which is what he's...
Again, that was amazing.
There's a lot of amazing bits you discount it, but that's brilliantly moving. He talks about how, because he hasn't got children of his own, and that's he's almost welling up about that, which I thought was very interesting. He doesn't like talking about these things. He doesn't normally talk about these things, and yet he does. He goes to see loads of kids in schools and talks about being gay to them and his sexuality. And what they tell him is, and I thought this was so interesting, is they don't like being tied down to a specific category of sexuality, and they all consider themselves individuals. That kind of thing was so interesting. He himself goes, maybe it's time I stop being, considering myself gay, man. I thought, that incredible stuff. So I think... It warrants the long burn. It warrants the slow burn.
Okay,
even.
Here's
I don't know what a long
though.
Burn
the long,
is.
Slow burn.
It warrants the hour 34 minutes because there are absolute gems you wouldn't get.
Right, okay, there are gems. That's the thing, right? And I completely agree with you. The school stuff and everything that he's doing is so incredible. And the Stonewall stuff, that's incredible. I think my problem with it is that I didn't actually enjoy the stuff where he was talking about acting.
And you've made that clear, but I think even that is, I thought I thought
I liked that. Should I tell you why I liked it? Because I wasn't familiar with his body of work. So actually, it's quite nice. I now have a respect for him that I didn't have before.
I already had a respect for him, but I just wasn't as
interested.
I think
you've discounted it too quickly. I think there are other, like he talks about why he didn't get film work early on and he really wanted film work then and get. There's loads of, honestly.
All the Olivier stuff was amazing. Yeah.
Fascinating. You're wrong.
No one's wrong and right.
Yeah. But they're definitely, I thought it was as good as it could have been for this type of thing, a profile of a I really did. You're laughing.
No, I'm saying it's as good as it could have been.
I'm giving you four stars.
No, but I'm giving it five stars because what it set out to do, a profile of a 78-year-old legendary actor, and it's as honest and as revealing as it can possibly be, it gets five stars. How many stars are you giving it, Steph?
It was on the BBC for something to watch at Christmas, I'd be giving it 4.5 stars. But if I have to go to the cinema and watch it,
I mean, it is a good point. I don't know if I'd go to the cinema.
Okay, I think, that's fair enough. But if you do go and see it in the cinema on the day they're putting out with the Q&A with Graham Norton, it'll be an exciting event,
okay.
I think.
My official rating is 3.5 stars.
Okay. McKellen playing the part. It's getting its UK premiere screening on Sunday the 27th. And they're beaming it to cinemas nationwide, and you get the Q&A with Graham Norton, and Derek Jacobs is going to be there as well, and then you get to see it in cinemas afterwards. Everybody. Finally in the meat. What? See, I'm angry with you.
You look angry with me. Are you upset with me?
That's my resting face. Like Elton John at the wedding.
Oh, I live for that face.
That downturn.
Yeah, you look
downturned mouth. He's not being, he wasn't angry. That's just his resting face.
He's got a hangdog disappointed
face. Hangdog. It's a bit hangdog. I'm disappointed, I'm not angry, yeah.
Are you?
Yes.
Okay.
But we'll see what happens with Arrested Development. Yeah. Yeah. Which is your favourite, isn't it?
It is my favourite.
Season 5. We've waited years for this.
Oh, a long
almost
time.
Almost quite literally years.
Literally, we have waited five years.
Yeah.
Five of them. It starts on the Netflix on the 29th of May. This is the, going back years when it was on
Donkeys.
The Fox Channel in America. And then it was revived by Netflix 5 years ago. And in the revive, this is all about the Bluth family, this family of eccentric. They had success, then it all went horribly wrong. Led by Michael Bluth, played by Jason Bateman. All kinds of very eccentric figures. It's narrated, of course, by the great Ron Howard.
Yeah.
And there's lots of inside jokes about that, about how, you know, he then wants to make a film about the family. In the last series, controversially, that went out on Netflix, it was done from each individual's character's point of view, the same story told
season
in 15
four.
Episodes, season four, the controversial season four. So it took a new turn, okay?
Mm. People didn't like it.
Was that a bit bored? Like identified?
So what's happened now is the creator of it has completely revamped that season. You can see the revamped version put back in chronological order now, already on Netflix now.
What's this new trend for people doing redos?
I know.
Like Peter Kay's finale of his car share, he just redid
actually.
It.
This is very necessary, this reboot, I think.
Yeah.
This fourth season reboot before you watch season five.
Right.
Because it is, have you watched the reboot?
No.
It is necessary.
Can we call it a redo?
You can do it a redo.
A do-over.
Yeah.
It's a do-over.
Yeah, a revamp. So that's there now. And then this is the brand new series, which reverts to the normal format, as in, you're watching all the characters. There isn't that particular focus on one character, the same story being told from lots of different points of view. It's back to normal Arrested Development, season five. It's all about trying to find what happened to Lucille II, played by Liza Minnelli. You've got Lindsay, played by Portia de Rossi. She's having a campaign to join Congress. Michael is even more confused than ever, trying to deal with the fact that there was nearly a proposal to make a film of their life by Ron Howard, who's still narrating it.
Yeah.
And lots of jokes about that. And of course, we should say that the controversial figure of Jeffrey Tambor, who was fired from Transparent, his brilliant award-winning role as the trans character in that, he's back in this thing. And everyone's saying, well, he just has to be back in it. And some people are annoyed that he's back in it because he was accused of sexual harassment, which he denies. Kay, I believe you are an Arrested Development virgin. Am I right?
I am. So I've got very little to say other than I thought this was very amusing. I feel like a lot was lost on me because if you join season five, family dynamics, a lot of stuff went over my head. However, what I saw, I enjoyed a lot and I'm now committed to going back and watching it from the start.
Oh, you should watch it from the start. It's
Where can
so,
I watch
so funny. Netflix.
It's all on Netflix.
It's all on Netflix.
Isn't it? Yeah.
Okay.
Is it? Yeah, it is.
It's all on Netflix. It's all on Netflix.
Brevity.
Yeah.
Good brief.
Who was your favourite character?
Oh, that's a toughie. I mean, I love Tony Hale, but
Tony Hale of
Buster.
He plays Buster.
So did you get that they were all brothers and sisters?
Yeah, but only because I had this sheet that Boyd had given me. I was like, oh, they've all got the same surname. Convenient. Yeah, I liked him. And I also liked Portia de Rossi's character. I found her funny.
Steph, as a fan, as a diehard Arrested Development, have you seen every single episode?
I've seen every single episode and more than once. I'm a real diehard fan of Arrested Development. I love it. I can watch it at any time as well. I like to kick back.
What you mean, like 3 in the afternoon?
I can watch it.
She's watching it now in her mind.
I'm watching it on my phone.
Oh, you can watch it anytime. I just find this particular brand of humour absolutely just hilarious. I find everything so funny. I love all of the characters' ridiculous quirks. I absolutely adore Michael Bluth. Did you get that his son, who is George Michael, just every time I hear that his name George Michael, even though I've watched it, I just still find that
so
funny. Isla Fisher, isn't it? So in the last season, Michael Bluth started dating Ron Howard's daughter, played by Isla Fisher, and so did his son. The whole farcical nature of it, I think it is absolutely genius. And the fact that Michael Bluth's character, he never has any jokes in it. He is the straight man. But he is perfect. I loved it. I think this is brilliant. It hasn't lost any of its
I was worried. I agree with you. I was worried about the Jeffrey Tambor situation because I'm so
but
politically
they make a joke
correct.
Of it.
They make a brilliant joke of it. So, slight spoiler alert, I'm gonna reveal the line where Ron Howard narrates saying his character, George Sr., realised his impression of a woman wasn't going to win him any awards.
Which is
such a great line.
Yeah, it's so good.
It was a relief, wasn't it? Because I remember watching the last season,
the
controversial season 4 on Netflix, and I did get irritated by
it is a bit,
that device.
It is a little bit
all the
boring.
Events, it's the same events from the different people's point of view, which is a classic narrative, but in there's so many of them.
Yeah.
And it got a bit much.
Yeah.
And this does feel like a huge sense of relief that they're just back to
the
normal, but still incredibly narratively ambitious. There's flash forwards, flashbacks, inserted little things. All the things that have been very influential, I think. Like, you know, shows like 30 Rock use very similar devices. I think a lot of them came from Arrested Development doing first. And just having Ron Howard now, so many in-jokes about his company, imagine making the film of the thing, so many in-jokes about this illegitimate daughter he's got, that he wryly comments on. The commentary alone, his voiceover alone.
The commentary is amazing.
Is so clever and funny. And just this cast, Will Arnett, Michael Cera, Tony Hale, David Cross, Jeffrey Tambor, Jason Bateman, to die
Liza
for.
Liza Bloody Minnelli, for God's sake.
Liza Bloody Minnelli.
You need to, though. I urge you to watch it from the beginning because you do need to understand the dynamics of the characters. Because I bet you didn't. Michael and Lindsay are twins.
No, I didn't get that.
Right, so you didn't get that. There's loads of little bits and bobs. But
loads of bits and bobs.
I love it. loads of bits and bobs. Goodbye.
Arrested Development back in glorious form. Season 5 launches on Tuesday, not a Friday. Netflix now, they've got so much new content, they have to spread it out.
Yeah.
Because, you know, traditionally all drops on a Friday. Yeah, good. Yeah, real strongly about that.
Spread it out.
Drops on Tuesday the 29th of May. I think it's the first half of this series drops out. I think they're dividing into two parts. I may have made that up, but I'm pretty sure that's true. Arrested Development, Season 5, Netflix, Tuesday 29th of May. How many stars, K, are you going to give it?
I'm giving it Thinko stars. That's 5 stars.
Wow.
Ooh.
For a virgin.
Yeah.
For a Arrested Development.
I like
virgin.
What I saw,
virgin,
yeah.
5 stars.
Wow.
I don't give those out willy-nilly.
I was going to say 4.5, but...
No. Were you? Well, I was going to say 5.
Okay. Well, you're saying it.
Yeah, I was
going to
say
5.
Are
you going to
say it? And I am going to say 5.
Our dev. That's that done.
What were you giving it?
4.5.
Why?
I don't know.
Maybe a curmudgeon. Come on.
All right, I'll give it 5.
Okay. Good.
Okay.
I love how they do have the flash forward still. So they have they say in the next episode, they don't happen. That doesn't happen at all in the next episode.
No, nothing. They
play with the form very cleverly of the whole thing.
And
in fact, the first 5-10 minutes maybe of this episode are like a recap.
Yeah.
But it's done in such a brilliant way. Yeah. It's a recap with new things that you haven't seen from the thing they're recapping. It's brilliant. So yeah, all right, 5 stars. I've recanted.
You've talked yourself.
I'm easily...
Boyd, I respected you more when you gave 4.5.
I mean, it's too late for respect, isn't it? We all know. I'm a man more sinned against the sinning, as I believe I've already mentioned. Now, finally, what time is it?
Question time.
And in what I believe is a podcast first, we've got an actual, real, genuine question from a listener. Okay.
It is from our top pog at Mira Jade, and she says, What is your favourite royal or wedding-inspired TV / film / book?
Say that again. So it's what is our favourite? So is
royal inspired or wedding inspired TV, film, or book?
So it could be royal, or it could be a wedding, or it could be a royal wedding. How did you take it, Steph?
I am going to take it for the answer that I want to give, which is Jennifer Lopez's film, The Wedding Planner. Ba-dum, boom.
So it's not royal; it's wedding.
It's wedding.
It's wedding themed.
And J-Lo is royalty in many circles.
So is that's a rom-com starring Jennifer J-Lo?
Are you telling me you've not seen The Wedding Planner?
What else happens in it?
Okay, she plans weddings. Matthew McConaughey.
Oh, Matthew McConaughey.
She's a wedding planner. Yeah. She's planning his wedding, okay? And then he obviously falls in love with her.
Yes,
it's incredible.
It's in from the Matthew McConaughey dark rom-com years, isn't it?
Oh, when Matthew McConaughey was in nowhere near an Oscar years.
Yeah, when he was all the posters for his films was him goofily standing askew.
Yeah, when he did like, what was that, 10?
Ten rom-coms.
Ten guys. How to Lose a Guy, 10 Days.
How to Lose a Rom-Com.
And then that divorce one with SJP.
Terrible. Oh God, that was
terrible.
That was terrible.
That was like the worst I've ever made.
Failure to launch.
Failure to. Well done.
Sorry, that was Minnie Mouse telling me what the time is on my watch.
Oh my God! I suggest you silence your watch.
I'm ever sorry. For I didn't even touch her. She just wanted to tell me.
So yeah, that's your choice.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mine is Father of the Bride, Steve Martin and Frank, aka Martin Short. And I thought it was, you know, it's obviously an absolute classic.
Have the chopper chicken.
Do you know what? This has never happened before. I was going to choose that.
Shut the front door.
You've only
shut
it
hard.
Is it? Oh, no, don't worry, because there's an episode in Sherlock where there's a wedding. Do you remember when there's the wedding in Sherlock?
Oh. That is good.
Oh, yeah, it is. So do you remember when he gets married to Amanda Abington?
Because as you yourself have pointed out many times, I am a Sherlock fan. I'm aware of the wedding episode,
but
which,
as
you've said, is a classic. It's an all-time classic. I'm not going to choose that. No. I've got a backup, don't you worry.
Which you can choose the same one and just say a different reason.
Oh, is it The Wedding and Godfather?
No, I didn't think of that. I mean,
is
good. It is a film. There's a film called A Wedding, directed by Robert Altman, which is an absolute classic from the 70s. In 1978, Lauren Hutton, Geraldine Chaplin, Lillian Gish. It's like it's basically, you know, Robert Altman back in the day.
Yeah,
he did MASH. He did The Long Goodbye, which is one of my all-time top five favorite films. Elliot Gould, and his style had this incredible style. Nashville, have you seen the original film of Nashville?
No.
Incredible. 3 hours set in Nashville. And he has this very loose, relaxed style whereby he's following all these characters.
I'm ever so sorry. What is that word?
Loosh.
What is loose?
Kind of like relaxed. It's like a,
Is it an actual word?
Yeah.
I've seen it written down. I didn't even know what it meant.
Almost loosh. Seemingly improvised, very, very not informal. That's another word. And so a wedding is set in a wedding and he's just following all the different characters around, the people who are getting married, their families, their extended families, massive cast, the people who are invited, and he just kind of, the camera just follows them around from place to place as the wedding day is developing, and you light up on a few of them and you almost overheard conversations almost at the same time. Sometimes it's very famous for people talking over each other, and
much like this podcast,
it's naturalistic. Yeah, it's exactly like this podcast. People interrupting each other, getting really irritating. It's really like this podcast. If he was still alive, he's sadly no longer with us, he would direct a good version of it if he could be bothered. And it's a wedding is in many ways, it's not his most famous film, but it's like the ultimate example of this, of just following these people around and going from thing, and it's brilliantly done and it's great.
Is it better than Frank though, in Father of the Bride?
Of course it's not better than Frank. I mean, I wanted to choose Frank, Father of the Bride, but I couldn't.
And can I just say, I can't believe that both of you didn't pick My Own Wedding, which you both came to as your favourite wedding
occasion. Oh gosh, actually, you know what though, we should have done that.
Is it available on DVD or on Netflix?
Probably is.
It is available on DVD. Get one to you.
But I think it would be a disservice to the listener, to the person on the ground.
No, Steph could upload it.
I'll upload it with my description of King Lear and then a formal apology to Ian McKellen.
Yeah, good. Richly deserved.
Now, a bit of business. Yeah. Ooh. I just want to say, Pogs, if you've got any questions, comments, as I said, get in touch at Unmissables Pod. But also, I'm on a bit of a drive to get some new Pogs because, you know, it's always good. Spread the word. So if you have any friends you think might like us, other than reviewing us, get in touch at The Min. We'll give them a little shout out for the new Pogs in our life.
We love all the old ones.
Oh, we've got a lot of love for the old Pogs, but, you know, we want to spread the word.
Oh, that's absolutely right, yeah.
I have a question.
This is a last minute question.
Yeah.
A new format
A new thing.
LMQ.
Okay, no, don't take this the wrong way.
I'm going to take it the wrong way.
I'm not taking the pee.
Okay.
Oh, she is taking the pee.
No, I'm not. Maybe. Have Doctor Who or Sherlock ever been married?
Doctor Who has, not to each other.
That would be. Can
I mean,
you
that's a big fan.
Boyd
I'm sure,
would lose his.
I'm sure
mind.
There's some fan fiction out there where they do get married. I know there is. But Doctor Who.
As drawn by Boyd.
Yeah, steady. Doctor Who did get married to River Song, pretty much. Yeah. Which is
who?
River Song,
the
great
hell?
Character, yeah. Alex River Kingston. Song. Alex Kingston, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
From ER.
The very same. You should start watching some Doctor. You'd love it, yeah.
I love her. She's got good hair.
Yeah, she's brilliant. There's marriage and everything.
Wow, they have kids.
No, not,
so not conventional.
Is their first dance River Dance?
It's an unconventional. It's an unconventional
what was
marriage.
River Song.
River Song, two words. Yeah.
Yeah, but why was her name?
Ah, that's
song?
A big thing. There's a whole thing about that. Oh, why
okay.
is she called
I mean,
River Song?
We don't have time for that.
I think we take this off.
I think just how, in the same way that Kate's going to go back and watch Arrested Development from the start, mm-hmm. you're going to go back and watch Doctor Who from the start. You've only got 50 years or so of episodes to cover.
You
it's
know
fine.
What? I've
and it'll still be shorter
time.
Than the
or
Ian McKellen
doc. You could just
stick
to modern remade Who, and then you've got about like 10 years or whatever.
Okay,
great stats, guys.
Yeah, it's been great. Did you, Kate? Did you enjoy the last minute question, the new format?
It's a new thing.
I liked it. I liked
it.
No, it's good. But we have to end now.
We do have to end now. Thank you very much. It's a goodbye for me. We'll be back next week.
Bye.